Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Fiona Barton, who's out with her third book in 4 years. Her first two novels were The Widow and The Child, and I still think about The Child very, very often. They were both international bestsellers. This one is called The Suspect. Protagonist Kate Waters, a London journalist, is back. Her and her husband's son, Steve, drops out of law school, heads to Bangkok. A couple other teenage girls from London are in Bangkok at the same time. Fiona, I don't want to give away anything, so kind of take it from there. Set it up for us, what you want the readers to know going in.
Well, it's a book about parents, children, a theme that I often return to. But I suppose the story is about two 18-year-old girls who go on a gap year to Thailand. They're just finished high school, and they want to go to university, but they've decided to take time off and to go traveling to get some life experience, something that quite a few kids in Europe do. Anyway, they go missing very quickly when they get to Bangkok, and Kate Waters does a story about them going missing. She thinks, like everyone else, that they're probably on a beach somewhere having far too good a time to ring home. But when bodies are found, she goes with a number of other journalists to Bangkok to investigate what happened to them. She's also hoping that while she's in Thailand, she can reconnect with her son, Jake, who has 2 years previously dropped out of university, out of law school, and gone to discover himself and has been terrible about staying in touch. So she's hoping that she can reconnect with him out there and talk to him about the rest, you know, what he wants to do for the rest of his life. But when she gets there, she quickly discovers that she's no longer just the reporter. She's now the story when various things happen.
This whole idea of a gap year, we have that in the United States where kids will go off and overseas. Is that a phenomenon apparently not unique to the United States, right?
No, not at all. In Europe, it's very common for kids. They finish school in the July. They finish their final exams. And then if they want to, they can go straight to university in the October of the same year. But it's encouraged, I think. It was very popular because, you know, they just finished exams, and to start another academic course, a lot of kids go, they do structured things. You know, they do working with charities or teaching English in different countries. My son went to Vietnam and taught English there for a year.
What's the attraction of Bangkok for a teenager?
It's very cheap. It's very cheap and very exotic, and anything goes. There's total freedom there, and you can make your money last a long time. The hostel that I based Mama's Paradise Bar and guest house on was $3 a night, and to be honest, they were overcharging. It was exactly as described in the book. I didn't stay a night.
In your previous novels, Kate was investigating crimes involving other families, and this time she's the story. How did that move along her character development for you?
Well, quite a lot, really. She's an interesting woman because when I started out, she was just a small character in The Widow. She was supposed to be, but she kind of muscled in, and it was lovely to write her. You know, it was like coming home, really. She sort of grew, and then in The Child, she was the investigator rather than the police. So she has grown along, but I think turning the tables on her, seeing the media through her eyes when she's the wrong side of it, if you like, helped me think of her in different ways. So as a mother, much more as a mother, and much more as a, you know, a normal human being, you know, her job aside.
When you do research, you did research for this novel. I've read that you observed an autopsy on an exhumed body. How solemn of an occasion was that for you?
Oh, gosh, I didn't. No, I was guided through it by a wonderful forensic pathologist, Debbie Cook, who a home office pathologist. No, I asked her to tell me, to walk me through it, and so she did. But I wasn't present for it. No, I'm not sure I've got the stomach for that.
Is it possible for a novelist to go too far in research for the sake of your art?
Yes. Yes. I think staying a night in Bates Motel in Bangkok would have been too far for my art.
So what kind of things did you find in Bangkok that, you know, you said it's cheap to live there and there's just all kinds of things, anything goes. Did you find yourself, was it not safe?
Well, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, I was obviously the oldest person in Khao San Road. It was like, you know, Auntie Maud goes to Bangkok. But, you know, just watching the kids, for some of them, it may be their first time away from home. And they're determined to have a good time. They've been told that they can have a good time in Bangkok. And so there was behavior that I thought was risky, yeah, definitely.
Parents never know everything about their children, especially their adult children, and that, sometimes that's a pretty good thing. But with Kate and Jake, what effect does that situation have on Kate as a mother?
Well, I think it's when you suddenly see your children in a different light, and that's quite a difficult thing for a mother. You know, there is a, I'm not saying it's for everybody, but for, you know, most mothers, there's a very visceral connection with their kids. It doesn't matter if it's the first day you bring them home from hospital or when they're in their 30s and have got children of their own. You still worry. It's your vulnerable spot. And so, of course, you don't know everything about your children. You don't know anything about, you know, your partner often, you know, your spouse. So it's quite shocking, I think, sometimes for, you know, to discover things that you had never even considered before.
How did you capture the grief of parents who go through a tragedy with their kids?
Well, for good or bad, I have spoken to a lot of parents who have been through tragedy. In my reporting days, I've spoken to the parents of murdered people. I've spoken to the parents of, you know, missing. So I think I have quite an insight into it. Definitely a huge empathy with people that this has happened to. And, you know, I've talked to people direct. You know, they've really kind of opened their hearts to me.
Do you find that there's a common denominator among all these parents in that situation?
No. You know, human beings are so complicated. People react in different ways. They show grief or sometimes they're just numb, absolutely numb. Because it's too much to deal with, not because they don't care, but so people do react in very different ways. Sometimes they're very angry, sometimes they're just too grief-stricken to speak.
When a parent in that situation talks to a reporter, and maybe from your reporting days, what incentive do they have to talk to the reporter?
That they want to tell their story. I know people, there are stereotypes of journalists that, you know, everybody is forced to speak to the press. It's just not like that. Often, well, more often than not, people come to us to say, I want to tell my story. I want people to know what has happened to me. So perhaps it won't happen to their children or that a wrong has been done and I want people to know that this wrong has been done or that something wonderful has happened to me, not very often, in the news, but you know, I want to share that.
Kate in the book describes the job of reporter as a touchy-feely job. What does she mean by that?
Exactly what I've just said. I mean, it's you know, we're taught in journalism schools that you should be objective. That's what they used to teach anyway. You know, that you would stand back, that you would see things from a distance, you would be, you know, simply reporting, but we're not secretaries. You know, we're not. You know, we're not taking dictation. And I think to tell somebody's story authentically and to give them an authentic voice, you need to empathize. You need to understand how they're feeling. And so I do think it needs to be more touchy-feely. Not that the reporter gets between the reader and the subject. the interview, but that you tell their story in as authentic way as possible.
As a reporter, are there things that you hear from parents that are in this situation that you would think, as you're taking notes, they would never say this if they weren't going through this grief? I'm just not going to put this out there, even though they think they want it out here now.
Yes, there have been. Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, I hope I've always been very careful to say to people, I hear what you're saying, but, you know, what effect will that have on, you know, on your future, on the way people see you or whatever? It's a very complex situation, you're right. I mean, it's very intense. And people do say things that you think, yeah, you need to. We need to go back to that and just make sure that that's exactly what you mean. And I check quotes with people. You know, I read. I used to. So I don't. I'm not a reporter anymore. But I used to read quotes back to people. You know, in interviews, to make sure that they were happy, and that that's what they were saying.
It seems to me that when a reporter makes that type of connection with a parent who's gone through grief or tragedy, that maybe a lifelong bond is formed, almost something akin to a priest and a parishioner type of relationship, because you suffered through or you shared that experience with them. Do reporters end up forming lifelong bonds with people in this situation?
They can do. I mean, I've certainly stayed in touch with some of the people, the people I spoke to, interviewed with. Because, as you say, I wouldn't say priest and parishioner. I would say more stranger on a train.
Oh.
It's that kind of conversation that you have with somebody that you can say what you want to say, and it doesn't matter. It won't cause grief. I'm just thinking about, you know, when people talk about losing a child or a partner or something, and, you know, talking to their own family could be tricky because they're going through their own grief. So the reporter is a safe pair of ears, I suppose. But yeah, certainly I stayed in touch with people for years after. Like Kate, I used to get Christmas cards from people and the occasional phone call, you know, if something happened with the case.
This book was not scary to me in a Stephen King sort of way, but it was suspenseful in an Alfred Hitchcock sort of way. How do you tighten up your writing to make it flow so well and not leave a lot of boring gaps?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. It's like comedy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't bear too much analysis because you think, oh, God, if I look at it too closely, it'll break. But I think part of it is being a journalist because, you know, you cannot waste a word when you're a journalist. You've got very tight space, very tight deadlines, so it's short, sharp, to the point. You know, I was writing sort of 500-word, 800-word news stories before, so I have kept that kind of leanness, I suppose, in my writing. I can't help it. I can't unlearn that.
All right. Well, I know as the readers, we appreciate it. The book is The Suspect. It's by Fiona Barton. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold. And if you haven't read her previous two books, The Widow and The Child, go out and pick them up because they are fantastic as well. Fiona, thanks for joining us to talk about your new book.
Thanks so much, Brian. Really enjoyed it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. One night in bankrupt in the world's dark.